This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 75,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/sword.
This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.
Episode number 78. I'm Veronica Belmont.
And I'm Tom Merritt.
And this is the Sci-Fi Fantasy Show, where we talk about the latest news going on in the genre world, talk about the books we're reading, talk about what you guys are saying in the Goodreads forums, and basically having a slamming good time.
Welcome. Come in.
Join us.
Have a tankard of ale and a laser gun in the gut.
That's not going to get more people to join us, Tom.
Not the second part.
You can't threaten them with laser guns in the gut.
Have a cyber party.
Oh, and by the way, I should warn you in advance that I am cooking rice in my high-tech Japanese rice cooker that I just bought. Uh-huh. And it will at some point make a tone.
Does it
use fuzzy
logic?
It is called, actually, I think fuzzy is actually in the name of the device.
Uh-huh. And most of those rice cookers use fuzzy logic.
Really? And so it's going to make a tone at me at some point that hopefully I will hear from downstairs. So if I have to stop the show and go get my rice, that's why.
Rice.
Through the magic of editing, the listeners out there will not hear
this
interaction.
They'll never experience that, they'll
pay. No, but if you hear some kind of flux in the... If they hear some kind of disturbance in the force,
gotcha.
It was me editing out that section.
Like a million rice kernels calling out at once
screaming
for you to eat them.
All at once in horror as they are steamed into plumpy deliciousness. Precisely.
We paint you a word picture, my friends, so that you too can enjoy Veronica's rice.
And hopefully what my rice will not turn out, let's start with the quick burns.
Science fiction writers have a job and it's time for them to do it, says a science fiction writer, Neal Stephenson. He wrote an article that has got a lot of attention over at the World Policy Institute, an essay that's basically a call to arms. At least that's the way it's described over on IO9. Mm-hmm. He says the hieroglyph theory of science fiction is what's important and explains it like this. Good science fiction supplies a plausible, fully thought out picture of an alternate reality in which some sort of compelling innovation has taken place. A good science fiction universe has a coherence and internal logic that makes sense to scientists and engineers. Examples include Isaac Asimov's robots, Robert Heinlein's rocket ships, and William Gibson's cyberspace. As Jim Carcanius of Microsoft Research puts it, such icons serve as hieroglyphs, simple, recognizable symbols on whose significance everyone agrees. And so he's basically making the argument, as I understand it, that without good science fiction, like sciencey science fiction, we don't advance our world as much because it's those ideas that give the actual scientists and the practical folks something to shoot for.
So he's basically calling for us to have more hard science fiction in the genre space?
Yeah.
Just more concrete.
It's not so much like just more hard science fiction, but more collaboration, more coordination. He's pointing out that scientists and technologists are narrowing what they do, and so they actually need the science fiction writers to help them figure out, you know, the broad implications of what they're talking about.
That's pretty interesting. Yeah, I'd be into that. I think we talked to Robert J. Stoyer about that a little bit, about how, you know, he collaborated with scientists for his book, which was definitely, it was a hard science fiction book, but it definitely had a more fantastical edge to it, I would say, as did Peter Watts in Blindsight. So I think it's a good idea for authors to collaborate more with scientists, you know, not even just for hard sci-fi, but like you said, for to have like a wider basis of knowledge to work from.
Stories that he says, he puts it, stories that tell us how each tiny discovery push us towards the ultimate final goal, so that we don't feel like when we're working on our little part of something that we don't have a clear picture of the wider future that it's leading towards. Mm-hmm. When you're optimizing your chip to get a few more a few more clock turns out of it.
Gigabytes.
Yeah. They a little bit squeeze a little more clock speed that you know what that could lead to. And that could lead to, you know, landing on the moon and blah, 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 blah.
He's like, now I have to write a science fiction book that includes something called a gigabyte.
He's not saying that that dystopian is bad. He's just saying that, you know, we need to have this other side too.
Okay, fair enough. So what he's really trying to say is that it should be a lot harder to write science fiction. You know what I mean?
Like, he's saying that
people need to put a little more effort into it.
He's saying people like Tom Merritt are not helping.
No.
Just throwing out crap on Lulu.
Just making stuff up.
No, he's actually not saying that. He's saying consulting with scientists. He's saying that we can have all that other stuff too, as long as we have the science fiction that inspires people to change the civilization.
Like his.
He doesn't say.
I don't know why I'm trying to be so down on Neal Stephenson.
Is not an example of that.
No, it's not. Well, as we mentioned, we don't really consider it to be sci-fi, at least as of our, you know, 25% reading completion. I have not yet come to that conclusion. How far are you? I know we'll get on this
32%.
Later, but 32%. I may be a little bit further than 25%, but not too sure. But anyway, let's jump into some TV and movie news this week. We got a post from Paulo in the Goodreads forums. He's talking about how the novel we are currently reading as our main pick for the book club, Ready Player One by Ernest Cline, is being picked up for a show. Or maybe a movie, actually.
Well, yeah actually, like that is absolutely true. Mm-hmm. Ernie Cline wrote Fanboys, so
yeah, he has experience in the movie world.
He's got
sure.
the connections, and it looks like the WB has picked up Ready Player One. I when I say the WB, it makes it sound like the old television.
The
network.
WB.
I mean Warner Brothers. Has
I think that's what happened. The way it was written as WB picks up, I was like, oh, so it's a TV show. And then I'm like, oh, no. They mean Warner Brothers, like the movie studio.
Yeah.
And that made a lot more sense. So who do you think should play in that movie?
You know, and let's put all the standard caveats out there. Getting an option and even having a deal doesn't mean a movie
it means
will
nothing.
Absolutely be made.
Right.
But I have a feeling that this one has a really good chance of being made. So I'm willing to speculate. God, who would be good? You need somebody young.
Yeah.
And kind of sassy who can pull off these lines.
I would say a young Will Wheaton.
Yeah.
Wouldn't he be perfect?
You know.
Oh, that'd be great.
I
was trying to think of it while I was reading the book as well, who I was envisioning. And I was envisioning someone who didn't really exist. Like, I definitely, for this situation, I know we've talked a lot in the past for, you know, mental castings.
Yeah.
And for this time, I did not have a specific person in mind. I'm almost thinking
Jonah
feeling.
Hill.
What? Really?
Yeah.
No, but he gets all towards the end.
But you know,
he doesn't look like. I don't want to spoil, but I mean, he.
Yeah.
He's not fat forever. Okay, how about that?
Neither's Jonah Hill.
Well, really? Are you thinking of the same Jonah Hill?
Yeah, I am. I'm just thinking positively.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Okay. I could kind of see that.
I don't know. There's something right about that. For me.
No, not for me at all, actually. All right. I'm not feeling that at all.
Seth Rogen instead?
No.
Too old.
You're airing
too
old
goofy to begin the training.
Me. I don't know why. I'm seeing someone a little more serious looking. That's like smart and sassy in the way he communicates, but he's like looks more serious because he's had a tough life.
I haven't seen any kids like that lately though.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe one of the kids from the Hunger Games, like the kid who played... Not PETA, the one who played the other one. Maybe someone like him. I don't remember his name. Anyway, I instantly forget books as soon as I'm done reading them, so I don't remember any of the characters' names.
Liam Hemsworth, who plays Gale.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I only have so much RAM in my mind where I can store. I could see that.
He's a little pretty, though. See, I'm thinking so it should not be a pretty boy.
So ugly him up a little bit.
Yeah, you can slim down, Jonah. You can ugly up Liam.
There you go. Anyway, so I think that's interesting. I would love to see that turn into a movie. You know, I think we have the technology to make it possible at this point for like the in the Oasis style scenes, I think are definitely feasible with what we can do now. Kind of the same reason why having an Ender's Game movie couldn't really happen until now, or having like a really convincing Lord of the Rings movie. So I'm excited to see how it turns out. If it happens.
Absolutely. Also, a thread started by Jason about Downton Abbey. It's not sci-fi, but wondering if there's any other fans of Downton Abbey in the house.
Have you seen this one?
What's that?
Have you seen this one?
I haven't. Have you watched it?
No. In fact, this is the first time I've heard of it, so I feel a little bit bad. But I'm curious to learn more about it.
Kate said at first she dismissed it as a Gosford Park rip-off, but it's since completely surpassed Gosford in her affections. Several people on this thread jumped in and said they just absolutely love it.
Oh, cool. Yeah. So Kate says that it started airing on ITV last Sunday, and episode 2 is on as of her writing. I'm curious to know where it airs here in the States. I'll have to look more into that.
PBS is going to have it in 2012, according to Kate.
Oh, cool.
Right now, it's only in the UK and Ireland and BitTorrent.
And the internet.
And the internet. And speaking of Downton Abbey, one of the stars of Downton Abbey, actress Rose Leslie, has landed the role of Ygritte.
Oh, nice. Some people on Twitter were saying that I look like her or something like that, but I don't at all.
No, she doesn't. But this looks like a great. I could see this.
Yeah, definitely. She looks great for the part. And she looks more like Tara from Destructoid to me. But maybe that's just because she's redheaded and freckly.
Yeah.
Cute as a button.
Oh, like a button.
Cute as a button. Yeah, I'm excited for season 2. It's going to be great. April.
Yeah.
Is that when it comes back?
April. Now, this article says that Leslie's arc on Abbey wrapped at the end of its successful first season on PBS. So apparently there is a previous season of Downton Abbey that we could get a hold of.
No, yeah, he watched the first season. That's what Jason was saying.
Yeah.
Was that they enjoyed the first season and now they're looking forward to the second season and trying to figure out when it's coming back. Very interesting. All right, well, you want to hit the calendar?
Let's do it.
All right.
October 18th, Aloha from Hell. Richard Cardry, in the third book of his hard-bitten fantasy series, James Stark, faces the prospect of a return trip to hell. Thankfully, he had a return ticket. Naturally, he'd prefer not to return to hell because it served as a prison for him for a decade. But with his nemesis holding his dead girlfriend's soul hostage, what's a guy to do? Stark doesn't have much choice. Don't expect him to be too happy about it.
Also on the 18th, Zone 1 by Colson Whitehead. The dead are stirring again. In the latest addition to the undead canon, a plague has decimated the earth and created hordes of superating ravenous zombies. Zone 1 is Manhattan, south of Canal Street, where the military has eradicated most of the dangerous zombies, but stragglers remain, lumbering living dead caught up in mundane tasks of their former lives.
Pay bills.
Taxes. Pick up milk at drugstore.
Dry cleaning.
Protagonist Mark Spitz is working with other volunteers to purge the stragglers from the city, and the narrative follows him over 3 harrowing days as he struggles with the after effects of post-apocalyptic stress disorder, PASD, his own loneliness, and the end of the world as he knows it.
Moving on to October 20th, The Iron Jackal by Chris Wooding comes out. It's the third volume in the Tales of the Kedi Jay series, and it sees the crew run afoul of the titular Iron Jackal, whilst the political tensions from the first 2 volumes in the series continue to rise.
And then on the 25th, we have IQ48 by Haruki Murakami. The year is 1984, and the city is Tokyo. We talked a little bit about this in the last episode, but a young woman named Aomame, I hope I'm pronouncing that nearly correctly, follows a taxi driver's enigmatic suggestion and begins to notice puzzling discrepancies in the world around her. She has entered, she realizes, a parallel existence, which she calls IQ48. Q is for question mark. a world that bears a question. Meanwhile, an aspiring writer named Tengo takes on a suspect ghostwriting project. He becomes so wrapped up with the work and its unusual author that soon his previously placid life begins to become unraveled.
And finally, I know it's a little ways away, but October 27th, Kingdom of the Gods by N.K. Jemisin comes out. It's Jemisin's third inheritance novel. The gods and mortals continue to meet and mingle and make trouble for one another. Shehar, the Era Mary heir, is conflicted, struggling with her responsibility to her family and her love for Sia, the trickster godling. Their lives are made even more complicated by the summoning of the all-powerful Maelstrom.
The Maelstrom.
Yeah. So if you haven't read Broken Kingdom yet, go read Broken Kingdom by October 27th so you can pick up the Kingdom of Gods.
No, this is the third one. So they'd have to read two.
Well, I'm assuming they read 100,000 Kingdoms as part of their good citizen sort of laziness. But you're right. Yeah, they should read all three.
All right. Well, let's take a moment for a quick break. This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 75,000 downloadable titles, possibly even up to 100,000 titles, across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many of the New York Times bestsellers. For listeners of this podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out their fabulous service. One audiobook to consider is, of course, Reamdee by Neal Stephenson, which is our alternate pick for this month. And if you want to get that, head over to audiblepodcast.com/sword. That's audiblepodcast.com/sword. And if you've already been using the service, let them know on Twitter, audible_com, that you love Sword and Laser and you love all the books that we've been reading.
And pass along that link to somebody else so they can use it, you know?
If you got a family member who likes to read.
Pass around the free books.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Do it for them.
Do it for the children.
And the children.
And the children. All right, well, now it's time for a little barrier sword, which is our feedback from the audience. Now, this first post from Kid was pretty interesting to read. He's making a comparison between Steve Jobs, who unfortunately, of course, passed away earlier this week or last week, and James Halliday, who is the, you know, eccentric, wealthy entrepreneur who basically started the whole game that they're playing in Ready Player One. So he writes, "Language fascinates and amazes me sometimes." Oh, this is going to be difficult to pronounce, I have a feeling. "When I found out that there's actually a term for throwing somebody out of a window, defenestration, finding pleasure in another's misery, schadenfreude, the name of a book of names, onomasticon,
I guess so.
Or even the feeling of annoyance that one gets when they come up with the perfect comeback one-liner slash retort after the moment has passed. Esprit de l'escalier.
Anyway, when he found out all of those really hard to pronounce things,
he was like, he came across one that he can't figure out. It's he can't stop thinking about, well, all right. How do I explain this? He wants to know the feeling of when life imitates art, because he had this really bizarre feeling when Steve Jobs passed away and he couldn't quite place it. And then he realized that it really reminded him of James Halliday from Ready Player One. And so we're now everyone's trying to figure out what that feeling is, what that sense he's getting from this experience means, if there's a word to put on that.
Right. And he says that the death of Steve Jobs reminded him of the death of James Halliday, the way everyone reacted to it because they had made such an important technological contribution to the world. I don't think he's expecting that Steve Jobs is going to, you know, show up on a video with three keys that he hid in iOS or anything, you know, that
Lord
literal.
Rip One actually thought he half expected his iPhone to give him some sort of message with clues to some treasure.
Yeah. But I see the sort of parallel of, like, you know, this technological pioneer dies and, you know, the world mourns. And I don't know if there's a word for that sort of synchronicity.
Well, maybe that's kind of it. Maybe it is synchronicity.
Yeah, I guess it could be.
But it's a little deeper than that. A little something more going on there. So if you have any ideas for Kid, let him know in the forums.
Nick wrote on the Ready Player One forum. He's a couple hours into the audiobook and heard him describe the online school. It got me thinking, why would this not work? And of course, he's got some spoilery minuses and pluses, but he says, "I don't think the things I've mentioned are too spoilery, but I marked them just in case." The minuses being, you know, physical education, learning nonverbal communication. People need to learn to deal with fitting in the real world. People learn fast. And if anything, recent news has taught us that cyberbullying is just as bad as regular bullying. So it's not that it would escape bullying altogether.
Well, I mean, there were the benefits that you could mute someone when you didn't feel like listening to them anymore.
Yeah. I use that in my regular everyday life. But he says with an avatar, you aren't encumbered by your appearance socially, being in, and financially, the cost to run the school would be much cheaper. So,
yeah. So what do you think? Would you go to, I mean, people offer virtual courses all the time. Even Stanford offers a lot of great courses that you can take for free.
I have to say, internet.
Have you tried this before?
I know that things are done better when they're in person. And I'm not saying technology won't catch up with that ability at some point, but right now the idea that we can't see nonverbal gestures, we can't read another person's expression over video, even and definitely over audio, means that it is harder to interact with people virtually at this point than it is in real life. And so I still think that you're going to get a higher quality of instruction when you're in the room with the teacher, in the same reason that you need a small classroom. When you have a classroom of 150 people, you might as well do it by distance learning, because you're not going to have any kind of real interaction there.
Well, I mean, but what about in a place like the Oasis, where it is almost as good as real at that point?
Well, and that's the thing. I think in the Oasis, the way he describes it, it might be the kind of technology that gets past my objections. But sadly, we do not have the Oasis yet.
Oh, gosh. I really hope that happens in my lifetime.
Yeah.
I really hope that immersion gets to the point where it's almost, you can't tell.
Yeah.
I want it to be to that point. That's one of the things in my life that I really, really hope I see in my adult life.
And there's, I always try to anticipate this stuff. And there's people in the thread who are saying, hey, I'm taking online classes and it's great. And there are definitely big advantages to online classes when you can't be physically present. It's a way to learn things that you would not have the opportunity to do otherwise. And like I said, when you're talking about, when I was in college, we had some classes of hundreds of people, you might as well take it online versus that. That's just listening to a lecture and you're not getting a lot from being present.
I don't know. I don't know if I agree, because in my personal experience, just even being in the room makes me focus more than
maybe
reading
right.
something online. Like, I've tried to take a few live mocha classes for Spanish because I was trying to brush up on my Spanish. And man, I could not concentrate. I could not sit through the classes. I'm just, when I'm on the computer, there's so much going on at the same time, I can't focus.
Well, and maybe that's what takes you back to an Oasis type thing almost being necessary, because it immerses you so much that you don't have those distractions anymore.
Yeah, and it prevents you, even when you're in the Oasis, from accessing other things like, browsing the web or answering emails or doing things like that. When you're in school, you are in school. And that's what you are supposed to be doing, unless you're like Wade and have ways around that, which he did.
Yep.
This is one that was posted by Josh, our friend Josh Lawrence, and he posted online playable versions of most of the games that were mentioned in the quest line for Ready Player One. So if you don't want spoilers, don't click on this thread, but there's a lot of great like Flash or Java emulation games, recreations of the originals, ports basically, for some of these early, early games. And I think it's pretty awesome. I want to go through.
In fact, I'm surprised somebody hasn't come up with a wiki already that just collects all of the movies, the songs, because you can experience everything from the book online. You can watch War Games online.
What's from stopping us?
Let's do it. Nothing but energy.
Oh, that's true. Good point. Energy. I think we could do something like that.
I went and downloaded the Atari app for iOS on my iPad.
Oh, really?
When I was reading Ready Player One, because I just wanted to start playing all these Atari games that he was mentioning.
Very cool. Well, that was awesome of Josh. I'm excited to test out some of these games, test my mettle against the machine, see how I would do in the Oasis situation. Probably not well, but...
Well, I'm definitely not going to be as good at these games as the characters in the novels.
Yeah.
Who have been doing nothing but practice their entire lives.
The past, 4 years, at least. All right, so do you want to do a book check-in, see where we're at?
Yeah, well, Ready Player One, not much to check in for me. I'm done. Did you finally finish up?
I did finish.
All right. So let's give folks who took us at our word when we kicked it off last week, let's give them a little more time before we wrap up. But how are you doing on Reamd? You said you're 25-26%.
Yeah, I'm about a quarter of the way through. I'm enjoying it, but it's been tough for me to find the time to read lately.
I just hit a point, it's around the 30% mark, mm-hmm. Where everything shifts perspective.
Oh, I'm getting the perspective shifts. And so I'm getting new characters being introduced.
Yeah,
and suddenly and things are changing.
Start to take off. And then I can feel the novel getting the momentum that I'm used to and wanting from a Neal Stephenson book. And not that I haven't been enjoying it up to now. Mm-hmm. Usually, though, I get to a point with Stephenson where I can't put him down. Mm-hmm. With Anathem, I got sick and stayed home and read it. I was loving it so much. I think I really was.
Got sick.
I think I really was quote, sick, quote. But it was one of those things where I could have gone in, but I'm like, hey, I'm sick. Mm-hmm. I should infect my workmates. And I haven't felt like that about Reamd, but I'm starting to get tingles of that sort of like, oh, I need to get back to that. I want to find out what's going on.
Yeah. So. I've got a couple of days off this week, so I think I'll try to catch up on some reading or on my Deus Ex playing.
The other thing I'm reading is The Magicians by Lev Grossman.
How is that?
Almost to the end of it, and it's fantastic.
Is it? Okay, because I wasn't sure if I should pick it up or not. I was really considering it, and I almost got it on Audible, and then I didn't, and then I started reading the next Gail Carriger book, and so I'm very curious to know what you think of it.
You know, it was reviewed by Cory Doctorow as sort of being Harry Potter in the real world. Mm-hmm. Like, instead of, you know, things working out so pat, and instead of, you know, being quite so magical, it was like if you went to a magic school, this is what it would really be like.
Gotcha.
You know, because the school would be like a real school with the same sort of bullying and the same sort of hard classes and mm-hmm. really unfun stuff. And so it is like that for about half the book. But there's also an aspect of it which is like a real world C.S. Lewis Narnia. And I don't want to give away spoilers, and I'm not saying they go to Narnia, but there's a book that the main character is a fan of about Fillory, and it's obviously a kind of thinly veiled allusion to Narnia, and the way that book is treated is really, really interesting and really essential to my enjoyment of this as well, because I was a huge C.S. Lewis fan. And so I don't want to say anything else because it would be too spoilery, but mm-hmm. it's a really, really well done, modern magician fantasy, Harry Potter, C.S. Lewis-y kind of thing, where the kids curse, you know, and when they cast a spell and it doesn't work, they say bad words and that's going to bother you. You shouldn't read it. But I find it hilarious because I'm like, yeah, cool. Exactly. That's how kids talk.
Yeah.
They don't sit there, you know, speaking ancient English. So yeah, I love it.
Okay. Maybe I'll pick that one up next. That's exciting. Cool. So that's all you're reading so far?
That's it. I've got Reamd and the Magicians going, and I'm just about done with the Magicians. I'll probably move on to Magic King, I think. Grossman's recent follow-up.
Nice. All right. Well, let's pick up with some emails, and we'll do more wrap up with the books next week, I believe. Although I don't know, should we give them another week to read, or should we do a wrap up next week for Ready?
We could do let us know if you're firmly
some people
against
were,
this.
I pinged him on Twitter earlier today on the Sword and Laser account, and I said, hey, how far along are you guys? Are you done? Are you ready for a wrap-up? And they were like, just started, you know, 10%
Just started
through.
Ready Player One or yeah. Just started Reamd?
Because they just, Ready Player One, because they
Ready
just
Player's
heard about it
such
on
such a fast read.
It is
we
a fast
kinda,
read.
We can kind of test the waters by next week, but I was going to suggest we wrap up Ready Player One next week and then wrap up Reamd the week after.
Okay. Oh,
yeah.
Do we have to do an official wrap up for Reamd? Because
we don't.
I have a feel like it's going to take me a while.
Well,
I'm
then we should
saying.
Go 2 weeks, and then we should give it a couple weeks, probably.
All right, we'll talk about it later.
Yeah.
So let's hit the emails. We got one from Chris. He says, hi, I just discovered your podcast and I'm listening from the first episode. Wow. That is awesome. It's full of geeky goodness.
Like a time capsule.
I know. And I've enjoyed every episode so far. However, I discovered that the MP3 for podcast 25 is unavailable. Would you be able to check the link in your spare time or perhaps send the MP3 via email? So I sent him the MP3.
Fixed it in the blog post.
You did?
Yeah.
Because I fixed it.
No.
Yeah, I did.
I fixed it this morning.
Oh, I fixed it this morning.
It was broken and I fixed it.
I fixed it. No, I really fixed it. I changed the link and everything. It was the Brandon Sanderson interview.
Wait a minute. Did you change the embedded player or the link at the bottom?
I changed both, and you don't do this stuff, so you shouldn't touch it.
When I got into the post, the embedded player was working, but the link at the bottom was not.
I tested that. I played it.
It wasn't playing, so I changed that one to the correct link.
Whatever. You did not.
I sent him an email.
I sent him an email. Are you pretending to be me? You have to include me on these emails because I also emailed him back and I included Sword and Laser. So you should have seen the email where I sent it to him.
That's hilarious. No, I didn't see it. Well, we probably sent it at exactly the same time, is my guess.
Anyway, Chris, we have fixed this for you.
Twice.
Thank you for listening to the show and for starting at the beginning. You're a good man. You're a good man. Or lady. You could be a lady. Chris is also a lady.
Could be a lady.
Sometimes. So whoever you are, thank you very much. We appreciate it. We appreciate your patronage. And then we had a tweet from Macrologia. At Veronica, I think that whenever on Sword and Laser, you should be referred to as Death Stalker Commander by Ace Detect. What is it? What?
Why?
Why? Did we make that joke? I don't remember. I'm usually drunk when we do these podcasts.
Are you drunk right now?
I'm not. No, I'm not.
No, no, you're not. You're just trying to say that.
I know.
I don't remember why, and I'm sure Macrologia can clear this up, but I will refer to you as Deathstalker Commander.
Deathstalkers are from, I mean, there's Deathstalkers in Fallout.
So why did you put this in the light up if you have no response?
Well, I thought maybe you would get it. Oh, wait. Oh, Deathstalker Commander Belmont in the WoW wiki. Okay, so this has triple meaning, almost.
Oh, wow.
Deathstalker Commander Belmont Forsaken that helps lead the assault against the Worgen within the ruins of Gilneas and later commands the troops fighting Lord Godfrey and within Shadowfang Keep.
So. Deathstalker. I haven't played Worgen yet.
Okay, so that must be...
Deathstalker Commander Belmont, thank you for including that.
Wow, that's funny because Deathstalkers are in Fallout also, so I thought he was making a reference to my voiceover in Old World Blues. You know? But he wasn't.
Now we got it.
It's Warcraft. All right, and then we want to say hello to some new members this week. We have Jim, Frank, Wes, Corey, Garrett, Gordon, Ramon, and Anthony. So welcome to the Goodreads forums, and I hope you enjoy the conversations.
Hello.
Hello, bienvenidos.
That is our official hello.
And so I guess that's it. I guess that's all we have. So everyone, if you haven't finished Ready Player One, get reading. If you want to, if you have finished and want to move on to Reamdy, we're also reading that and discussing it in the forums over on Goodreads. So yeah, join in on the conversation. And if you want to get in touch with us, the email address is theswordandlaser@gmail.com. The website, as always, is swordandlaser.com. And as I mentioned, you can find all of our discussion happening over on Goodreads. And our Goodreads integration is just going to get better and better, trust me.
Woo! Looking forward to that.
Good stuff in the pipeline for us.
Things.
Yes, I do. Things and goodness. Things and wonderfulness. All right, we will see you guys next time.
Bye.
Bye.
I am recording.
I am also recording. And 3, 2. Hey, everyone. Welcome to episode 78 of... Wait, that's not how I start the show. What am I doing? Oh, I'm doing the intro for Core. Nice. Okay. And 3, 2.